Okay, we begin here on the bottom of Chav Ted and Bet, two lines from the bottom. The Gemara says, Virami derova derova, Virami derab Nachmana derab Nachman. We have a stira between the case that we just brought in the Gemara and an upcoming case in which Rava and Rav Nachman's positions are seemingly reversed. In the previous case, we had an individual who came along and said, what are you doing in my house? And the other individual said, I bought it from you and I've been there for 3 years, the Yemei Chazakah. And the other individual responded to him and said, no. I've been living on the inside or a captive house all along, and I've been going out through your house. It's my house. I lent it to you, but I've been walking through it to demonstrate my ownership. I exited my house, which is on the inside. I had other options to go out, but I exited through your house to demonstrate my ownership over here. Others suggest, which will be interesting given the case coming up today, that Shkunei Kavai means I was far away. I was in a location where I couldn't hear about the fact that you were here, or I was in a location where you could never have purchased it from me because I just haven't been here. So then we have differences in the psak here. Rav Nachman suggests, Zil baru achilteich. Rav Nachman says it's the obligation of the person living there to prove that he has a chazaka, and that he has a soul chazaka, that nobody else impinged on his chazaka. Whereas Rava says, how could you pass like that? Amotzi michaveiro alav haraya. The person who is mukzak in the property now is the person living in the property. The person living in the property now is the new owner, the purchaser. The original owner wants to take it back. He's got to bring evidence to that fact. Amotzi michaveiro alav haraya. So now we have another case, which the Gemara says results in just the opposite opinions. And so the Gemara wants to understand what's going on. Why is there no contradiction in their positions? Rami derava derava, Rami derav Nachman, derav Nachman. Oud amalei lechavrei. Person says to his friend, Kol nechzai debei bar sisin mazvin alecha. All property that I purchased from Bei Bar Sisin, I am selling to you. So he has large tracts of land. He has large holdings of property. And he says, I'm selling to you all properties that I bought from Bei Bar Sisin. There was one plot of land that was called the Bei Bar Sisin. It still had the name of the original owner on it. The seller says that did not belong to Bar Sisin. It was called the Bei Bar Sisin. For whatever reason, people called it that name, even though I did not purchase it from them. So he says this is not included in the contract. This is not included in the sale. I only sold to you with that which I bought from Bei Bar Sisin. This piece of property, even though it's called Bei Bar Sisin, I didn't buy it from them. That's just the name that it has. After the Kamei Rav Nachman, again, they bring the case before Rav Nachman, Ukma biyodo delokeach, and he put it in the hands of the purchaser. Amalei Rava, Rava again responds, Dina achi, is that the appropriate answer over here, the appropriate psak? Hamozi michaveru lavaraya. The burden of proof is on the one who wants to change the status quo. So the stira, which obviously there'll be an answer to in a second, is the fact that they are taking opposite positions over here. In the first case, Rav Nachman favored the original owner, the seller, and said that he is the one who has the possession. The other party's got to bring a proof. Whereas Rava saw the buyer as being the one in possession of it, and therefore the original owner has the burden of proof on him. Here we have just the opposite, where Rav Nachman says that the buyer has the advantage, and therefore the seller has to prove that it's not the Bei Bar Sisin, that it doesn't belong to him. And Rava is saying just the opposite. Rava says here, the seller is the muhzak in the property, and therefore the buyer has got to bring the proof, or the burden of proof is on the buyer. So in the other case, Rava said the burden of proof was on the seller. Over here he says the burden of proof is on the buyer. And Rav Nachman gave the opposite psak. Mar says, Kasha derova aderova, Kasha derav Nachman aderav Nachman. Seemingly we have a stira, contradiction in the position of Rava as well as Rav Nachman. Gemara answers, derava lo kasha. The stira within Rava is not a question. Hata mocher koi v'nichse. Over there, meaning the second case that we brought, the seller has the possession of the item. And since the seller has the possession of the item, and the lokeach, the buyer, is the one who wants to take it away from the mocher, that is the motzi michaver lavaraya. The burner of proof is the one who wants to change that status quo. Hacha, our case, the first case that we brought before, lokeach koi v'nichse. The person living currently in the property is the buyer. And therefore, the seller has the burden of proof to remove him from it. So all we're saying is that for Rava, the cases are different because who is presently in the property is different. In the first case, the buyer is presently in the property, therefore the obligation is on the mocher to change the status quo. He has the burden of proof. In our case, the seller is the one who holds the property, and the buyer is trying to take it away from him, and therefore the burden of proof is on the buyer. The Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman also is not a stira. Kevin, Damarlei de Bei Bar Sisin, Umikariya de Bei Bar Sisin. He in the contract said anything that was Bei Bar Sisin, and this is called Bei Bar Sisin. Aleidi de Ramiya de Gluye de La Bei Bar Sisin. Then it's his obligation to demonstrate that this isn't the case. The contract was generic. The contract just said the Bei Bar Sisin's property I sell to you. Now we find a piece of property that's the Bei Bar Sisin, and the seller all of a sudden claims that it's really not the Bei Bar Sisin. The obligation is for him to clarify that information or to convince us that this was not included in the language that he put in the contract. Even though in general, the truth is that in a contract that has ambiguous language, generally the burden of proof is on the holder of the contract to prove that the language includes more and not less. So for instance, if you have language in the contract that could be limited or could be expansive, we will give it the most limited interpretation. Over here, it's a little different because the language that is used clearly could include everything that's here. It's a chiddush to say that the property, even though it's called Bei Bar Sisin, I didn't buy it from Bei Bar Sisin. And that's why even though the language, in a sense, is ambiguous, but here the language favors the buyer because there's no reason to believe that the property is not from Bei Bar Sisin when it's called Bei Bar Sisin. And that's why we'll force the seller to demonstrate or to prove that it is not that way. Avahocha, the first case that we brought over here, lo yelag de nakit shtara. He's no better off than if he is holding a shtar. Miluk arminin le kayeim shtarech. Wouldn't we say to him, go ahead and validate your shtar, and then take possession of the property. So too by chazaka, demonstrate that your chazaka is valid, and then we'll give you the property. Remember, based on what we saw in Rova before, that the reason for the Shloshnei Chazakah, the 3 years of the Chazakah, is to replace the need for a shtar. After 3 years, we say that the individual doesn't have to hold on to a shtar, because these 3 years will act as the equivalent of a shtar. That means that these 3 years can't be better than a shtar. And just like if the guy pulled out a shtar that said, I own this property, we would say to him, go validate that in Beit Din to make sure that the Edim are there, that this is a valid contract. Similarly, we would say to him, if he has a chazakah, demonstrate that your chazakah is valid. Just like we can ask or demand that when it comes to a shtar, so too over here, we can demand the same thing when it comes to a chazakah. So now, you can formulate this in one of two ways, which is that, and even though technically a chazakah is stronger than a shtar shenu mikuyam, because a chazakah requires no additional proof, whereas a shtar shenu mikuyam requires validation in Beit Din. Nevertheless, the Rabbeinu Yonah explains over here that technically, or underlying a shtar shenu mikuyam is a valid shtar midoraita. The reason or the necessity to be mikayim the shtar is only a din derabonon. But deoraita, this is a fine shtar. And therefore, just like a fine shtar midoraita requires you to be mikayemet midorabanan, so to a chazakah, which is a fine way to establish ownership, still we will demand of you to bring additional evidence to the fact that your chazakah is valid, the same way that we demand extra precaution in you validating the contract, even though the contract is valid midoraita without that. And furthermore, he suggests that even though you have done nothing wrong with the shtar, and yet we still want you to validate the shtar in Beit Din, so to here, even though you've done nothing wrong as far as the chazakah is concerned, and your chazakah is valid, we still want you to validate the chazakah. So given that comparison, we're going to say, despite the fact that you have a chazakah here, we want evidence of that chazakah, we want proof of that chazakah. Now, as the Rashbam points out, that even though Rava is a Batra, Rava is a Talmid of Rav Nachman, and generally starting from Rava and onward, we say that Halacha Kabatra, the Halacha is like the later Amora. Nevertheless, in this instance, the Halacha is like Rav Nachman, because you have a principle that Halacha k'Rav Nachman bedino. When it comes to case law, the Halacha is always like Rav Nachman, because he is a Dayan, and he's an expert Dayan, and therefore when it comes to case law, we generally paskin like Rav Nachman. Therefore, the Rashbam concludes over here, Halacha k'Rav Nachman, despite the fact that Rava is Talmid is arguing on him. Next case. How da amar le lechavre? My bayit baha beitel. Person says to the individual, what are you doing in my house? Amar le, minach zevante, vachaltei shnei chazaka. Said, I bought it from you, and I've been here for 3 years. Amar le, bishukei barai havai. I was out yonder. I was nowhere to be found when this happened. The other possibility of explaining here, bishukei barai, is similar to what we saw in the previous amun of chavtenam and aleph, where the Shkune Gavai, some of the Rishonim explained that Shkune Gavai wasn't that he lived, like the Rashbam said, inside of a place that was captive to the outer part where the other person was living. Rather, Shkune Gavai means in a far-flung place, especially over here. Gavai means in the south, on the inner side in the south. Whereas over here, they would explain that Shuke Barai means a location in the north, it's very far-flung. And so over here, they're just different sides of the same coin. Over there, he was in a far-flung place to the south. And over here, he was in a far-flung place to the north. But the idea is the same, which is that the information wasn't reaching him because he was in this location. And therefore, I had no ability to hear about the fact that you were in my house. That's one possibility of how to explain it, is that I was Be'eretz Merchakim. I was far, far away in a far-flung place where there are no Shayarot that come. And given that, I had no way for the information to reach me. Even if you say generally there's a rumor mill that passes this information on, over here it would not have reached me because I was in such a far-flung place. The Rabbeinu Chananel and the Gaonim hook on to another aspect of this, which is it was Bishat Chirum. It was at a time when it was difficult or there was war going on or there were marauders on the road when people did not travel freely between even local neighborhoods because of the danger. And therefore, information wouldn't have passed. So here, I'm not necessarily so far flung, but I'm far enough away where the information would not reach me. Both the Rashbam here and the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Gaonim are relying on a Mishnah later on that discusses that when you are in different areas, Yehuda and Galil, that we don't assume that the information passes from one to the other. You're just too far away, and there aren't a regular flow of caravans going between them. And in that Mishnah, it also says that even within a particular area, if it is a Shat Chirum, if it's a time that is dangerous and people don't travel heavily, then the same thing would apply even in the local area, that information or news doesn't travel. Therefore, he had no way of knowing or getting the information that he needed in order to object over here. So Amar Lei, Va'it Li Sadeh, Techoshata Va'atit Latin Yomin. He says, wait a minute. Okay, I understand you were in this far-flung place, but I have a deem that used to return back to the city for a minimum of 30 days per year. Used to come back here every year for 30 days. So you did have the ability to get the information. During that period of time, I was involved in merchandising. I was involved in trading. I was working in the shuk. So I didn't have time to get the information, or I wasn't available to get the information. Now over here, there is a machloket as to what he didn't do because he was so busy with his business. If you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says, "Eini yachol limchot." I had no time to object. I had no time to raise the issue. I knew that you were there, but I just didn't raise the issue because I just didn't have time on my hands. Then the Rashbam quotes V'yesh Mefarshim, which is referencing to the Rabbeinu Gershom, and he says, "Eini nira be'einai." I don't think that's the right explanation, but rather, I had another house in the city. He suggests that he must have another house in the city where he stayed, and therefore I had no awareness even of the fact that you were there. I came to the city for 30 days. I had another place to stay, whether it was his own place, or whether he stayed wherever the business was, and he didn't go back to this other house. So therefore, I wasn't aware of the fact that you were there. I guess I was in the city for those 30 days, but during those 30 days, I was completely involved in my business, and I really didn't pay attention to anything else. And therefore, I had no idea that you were there. Not that I didn't object. I knew and I didn't object. I didn't know enough to object because I never knew that you were in the house. Rava says that's a reasonable claim to say that a person's involved in his business for 30 days, that a person is so deeply involved in his business. And even though he was in the city for 30 days, it's possible that the information didn't pass to him. He was not aware of the fact that this individual was in his house, or that he never found out about it, or even if he found out about it, according to Rabbeinu Gershom, he didn't object. Given that, it's a reasonable claim, and he can say that the reason that you've been there for 3 years doesn't prove anything, because I had no idea you were there, and I didn't object. Had I known, I would have objected. And therefore, the chazaka does not stand anymore unless he has evidence of the fact that there was a sale. All right, next case. Held amrle the chavre. Ma bayit b'hayara. Person says to individual, what are you doing in that land? Amrle, miplanya zvinta, damrle dezavna minach. Says, I purchased it from so-and-so, who said he purchased it from you. Amrle, at lavka modit. Don't you agree, d'hayara didei, that my land belonged to me originally. Va'at lo zavinta minai. And you didn't purchase it directly from me. Zil, out of here. Lav baldirim didiat. You have no claim over here. Amarova, Rava says, Dina Karmale. What he's saying is correct. Or the owner of the property, or the original owner of the property's claim over here is correct. So now let's put the pieces together as to what the exact scenario is. We have an individual who said that he purchased property from a third party, and that third party told him that he had purchased it from the original owner. As the Rashbam clarifies over here, we have no evidence to the fact that that middle party, that third party that purchased it from the original owner, had owned it. That means that both the buyer now never was present when it happened, because someone could make a claim, we're going to see that later on, that I was there when he bought it from you. That's enough evidence to say that the transaction did take place. Or if he has any testimony, any edim that show that the person he bought it from lived in it for at least a day and was present there, then again, we are towing on his behalf that the purchase was a good purchase, and therefore the burden of proof would shift back to the original owner. Given the lack of evidence over here to the fact that this individual had purchased it from the original owner, we're lacking any form of evidence that this third party purchased it from the original owner, and the party is holding it right now, says I purchased it through him and he had purchased it from the original owner. We now have a question on our hands as to whether this person now really has a fair claim. Remember, chazaka is only valid if you have a valid claim as to how the property came into your possession. The problem now becomes, as the Rashbam points out, Ela afilu chazik ba shloshanim. Even if you've lived there for 3 years at this point, einu chazaka. Umafkinu leminei. We're going to take it away from him. Daha chazaka she'eni matanahi. This is a chazaka that exists without a valid claim. You have a chazaka that you've lived there, but what is your claim to the ownership? Your claim to the ownership is only through a third party. That third party, we have no evidence whatsoever that he ever owned the property or that he ever bought it from the original owner. No shtar, no edim that said that he lived there at any point, as well as you never witnessed it, meaning that the buyer was not there when he bought it from the original owner. Given that lack of evidence, this individual has no right to stay in it. Now, the Rashbam goes on to say, even though the questioner over here, the original owner who's coming and making a claim over here, has no edim, he has no proof to the fact that he was the original owner of the property. But what is his evidence? He's saying, you admitted that I owned it. The buyer, and the one who's sitting in the property right now, said, the way that I came into possession of this property is, I bought it from the third party, who bought it from you. Embedded in your statement, and his admission that there was an original owner over here. And therefore, that's what the Rashbam says is koveya over here. The koveya is that you are a hodat baldin. You are a party admitting to the fact that there was an original owner, and I was the original owner. Let us just simply rely on your statement. And we're going to rely on your statement. Given that we're going to rely on your statement, then I don't have to bring any more evidence that I was the original owner, because embedded in your whole tana is that I'm the original owner. Given that, you have no proof that I'm no longer the original owner, and we're going to rely on that hoda'ah. That's the way that the Rashbam learns. There are those that don't agree with the Rashbam's position because they invoke a principle of apesha asur hu apesha hitir. That there is a principle that the person who brings the evidence, if the only way we get to this evidence is by him speaking up, then we have to believe him in both statements. So over here, that's the case. The only reason we know the original owner was the owner of the property is because he admitted to it. Well, his admission also says that a third party bought it from you and I bought it from that third party. So either you take the whole package or none of the package. If you want to take the whole package, he owns it. You want to take none of the package, we have no evidence that you were the original owner of the property. So So therefore, there are those that don't like the view of the Rashbam over here, because they invoke this principle of Pesha Asur Shepesha Hitir. And therefore, they explain that it's more than simply we're relying on his testimony over here, but actually, he made a statement, a clear statement to the fact that this individual was the original owner. Not just an implicit statement by saying, I bought it from so-and-so who bought it from you, but an explicit statement saying that you were the original owner, and then gives his whole story afterwards. That admission is then independent of the remainder of his statement, and that's why we can believe him and then not take the rest of his statement seriously or within the context of that. Because then it's no longer a Pesha Asur Pesha Hitir, because it was an independent statement that said it belonged to the original owner. So that's how those Rishonim get over the problem of Pesha Asur Pesha Hitir. And the Raivid suggests that this isn't really a case of Pesha Asur Pesha Hitir, because they're from two different perspectives. The Pesha Asur is that you're saying that he was the original owner. The Pesha Hitir is you're saying so-and-so bought it from him. That's not the same type of evidence. One piece of evidence is an admission by you that this guy was the original owner. The second piece of evidence is that you're saying, oh, I bought it from so-and-so who said he bought it from you. That's not the same level of evidence. One is hearsay, one is your admission. And therefore, you don't invoke the principle Pesha Asur Pesha Hitir here, and that would be supportive of the way that the Rashbam explains the Gemara. The Baal HaTosafot on the previous Amud agree with the general principles that the Rashbam lays out, but they say over here that the believability of this individual derives from a migo. Tosafot on the previous Amud says, we don't say that he has a migo and therefore he's believed over here. Because we don't invoke this believability retroactively. And since he already admitted that it belonged to this party, it belonged to the original owner, we can't now make a tana on his behalf. We can't make a claim on his behalf that he had a different option. He could have just said, I bought it from so-and-so, and I've been here 3 years, and that would have been the end of the case. The fact that he also mentioned that this person bought it from the first party, that should give him amigo of believability because he had a better claim. The answer is, once you've established a fact, you don't invoke amigo to undo or undermine that fact. You admitted that there was an original owner here and that there were really three parties involved, the original owner, the intermediary, and you. Given that, we don't then invoke amigo to say, oh, now you're believed retroactively because you could have made a different claim. No, your claim now precludes your ability to have amigo, precludes your ability to have that alternate claim. And since we don't have amigo lo mafreya, you're not believed in this case. Your admission causes your nemanut to be lost. And that's why the arer, or the original owner, gets the property back, because you've lost all nemanut by giving him the right or by declaring him the original owner of the property. So those are three different ways to explain what Rova is saying over here, that the admission governs the case, that Ashram says literally, your implicit admission is what governs. Other Rishonim say it's an explicit admission that governs. And the Baal HaTosafot say that it's amigo over here that gives you nemanot. We don't invoke this believability retroactively. Therefore, we believe the original owner, and the burden of proof is now on the new party that is here. Then, the party who bought it from the Gazlan will have recourse to go back to the Gazlan and claim his property. That's at least what the Rashbam says. The Rashbam says that he has a right now because there's a court edict that took the property away from the Gazlan and gave it to the original owner, and he can then make a claim against this Gazlan for his money back. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Yonah says he lost his money, because in this case, he will say, you spoke too much. You were the one who got us into this bind, because the only reason the property ended up in the hands of the original owner, or the Me'arer over here, is because of the admission of the buyer. And so therefore, the intermediary, the party that supposedly sold it to him, can say to this individual, had you not spoken so much, had you not talked so much and admitted the original owner's ownership, the property would still be in your hands. And therefore, it's your testimony that lost you the property and not the fact that I didn't own it. And given that, I'm not going to reimburse you. I'm not going to give the money back, because it's your own fault that you lost this property over here. Right now, Ha'ud Amar Lechavre, Mabait Bahayara. Another case. Individual says, what are you doing in this piece of land? I'm relaying Miplania Zavina. I bought it from so-and-so. Bechaltia Shnei Chazaka. And I've been here for 3 years. Been here eating away for 3 years, meaning that I have a chazaka on the property. I'm relaying Plania Gazlano. He says, that's very nice. But so-and-so who sold it to you is a thief. And you know how I know he's a thief? Because he sold it to you when he didn't own it. That's the way the Rashbam learns. Rashbam believes that there's no outside evidence here that this guy was a gazlan, but simply the original owner says that it wasn't his to sell. It's my property. Amalei, vayit li sadeh. I have witnesses that I went to seek your advice, seek your counsel with regards to buying this property. But Martli zil zavin, and you said to me, go ahead and buy it. It's a great buy. So it sounds like you knew that I was buying it from him, and you advised me to buy it from him. If it was really yours, why are you advising me to buy from a gazlan? You should have said, don't buy from him. He doesn't own it. It's my property. So the buyer here sought the counsel of the original owner, and the original owner gave his stamp of approval and said to him to buy it. Had it been that the intermediary party was really a gazlan, well, how are you giving me advice to buy from a gazlan? Amalei, hasheni noachli, barishon kashe emenu. He says, I'll tell you why. Because you're a much easier going guy. I am much more comfortable taking you to court and getting my property back than I am taking the original party to court and getting my property back. So I said, better that you own the property than the gazlan. The gazlan holds the property. I'm going to have a very hard time extracting the property or getting it back. Now that it's in your possession, I can get it out of your hands. And so I'd rather have you be the owner than the gazlan be the owner, because in this way I'll get my property back. So here what we say is, that's a fair claim. The fair claim is that he gave counsel or advice to buy it, not because it wasn't his property, because he felt that that was an easier way or a more certain way that he would get his property back. The owner is saying that the intermediary was a gazlan, but he was either a strong man, he had political clout, the courts couldn't get to him, and he couldn't get his property back from him. So he'd rather have the buyer here buy from the gazlan, even though knowingly it's going from a gazlan, because now he can get the property back. That's the way the Rashbam explains this. The Baal Yom Tov Shavuot only add in one extra item here, which is Perush, Yesh Li Edim Shu Gazlan. That not that the guy shows up and says he is a gazlan because he sold you the property and the property really belongs to me, but rather I have evidence of the fact that this individual is a gazlan. The Lo Kepeir Shekuntris, and not the way that the Kuntris explained it, the Ein Lo Edim Shehgzik Ba Amucher Afilu Yom Echad, that he has no evidence of the fact that he held it even for one day. From there, you would imply that the only way we know that he's a gazlan is because the owner shows up and tells us he is a gazlan. Says, because if that was the case, they should have given the answer that they gave before, that you, by your own admission, say that it is my property. The fact that the Gemara doesn't go down that route shows you that the case here is different. And the case is different here is because he has evidence. He has a deem in this case that he was a gazlan. So the Tosfot argues on the Rashbam says there's no evidence of the fact that he's gazlan. And the only way we know that he's a gazlan is because the original owner is coming and telling us that he sold the property without permission. That's enough of a piece of evidence, since the buyer has no proof that this middle party bought it from the original owner. No, he needs evidence of the fact that this guy's a gazlan. And the reason they say that there are edim to the fact that there's a zela here, because that completely nullifies the chazaka. Because even if a chazaka was before that, evidence the fact that this is a gazlan now makes it a chazaka she'eni matana, and therefore the chazaka carries no weight in this situation. On the other hand, what the Rashbam is going to have to argue is that even if there were a deim that there was a gazlan, the chazaka here could be strong enough, because he could just simply say it was sold after that. Just because you have evidence of the fact that the property was stolen at some point is not evidence of the fact that he didn't sell it subsequent to that. And therefore, the chazaka could overcome the edim, and therefore having edim here is no different than simply the person saying that he is a gazlan. What you're pointing out is a fair point, which is, there is a view with lifnei iver lo titen michshol, is not to give bad advice. And you shouldn't give a person advice when you know otherwise. So this person might be in violation of lifnei iver lo titen michshol and giving the person advice to buy from a gazlan. All we're saying over here is that in that advice, he doesn't lose his right to say that this individual was a gazlan. We were trying to show through the fact that he advised him to buy from this individual that he's lost his right now to claim that that individual is a gazlan. That is not true. We're saying that there is reason why he might advise him to buy it, despite the fact that he's a gazlan, despite the fact that he knows that it's a bad sale, because that will give him the opportunity to take his property back. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Tishlein Mechshol. He gave him bad advice. But that bad advice doesn't forfeit his right to claim that the individual was a gazlan. And even though he withheld that information, there was a reason to withhold that information that justifies his position and doesn't lose him that right. But that doesn't mean, again, that he didn't violate Lifnei Iver Lo Tishlein Mechshol. Amar Rava, Gdina Gamarle. So Rava says, in this case, he has the right to make such a claim and take it away from the gazlan. Kiman, who is this like? Ke'admon. This is like a mondetnan. We have the Mishnah in the last parak of Ketubot. Haurer al sadeh. Person who makes a claim against the field and says, that field is really mine. And the person you purchased it from was a thief. Vichatum alei be'ed. And that individual was signed as an aid on a contract, contracting the property. So you have the original owner, a thief, and then a buyer. The buyer produces a contract that he bought it from the thief, and signed on that contract is the original owner. So there, it seems he should have lost his right to make a claim anymore, because why did he sign on a document purchasing it from a thief? Admon omer, asheni noachli, arishon kasher imenu. Admon says the exact same logic that was presented over here, which is that I like the second guy better. I'd rather have him in possession of the property, because then I can get it back, versus the thief, who I couldn't get the property back from. And therefore, he doesn't forfeit his right to say this guy's a gazlan, even though he signed on the contract. Chamim omim, ibeded zchuto. You signed on a contract, you lose your rights at this point. Mar says, afilu teime rabbonon. Even the rabbonon would agree over here. Hotom avid leimase. In the Gemara in Ketubot, the Mishnah in Ketubot, over there he took decisive action. That's why he loses his right. Avahacha dibura avid inish de mikrei velmar. People will say words that are just hot air, or people will say things that are not meaningful. In the essence, there's a difference between what he did here versus what he did in the Gemara in Ketubot. To sign on a document is an official act. And when you sign on that document, you are forfeiting any right to say after this that this sale was not a proper sale, or to say that this guy was a gazlan. Over here, he didn't take any official act. And I'm specifically saying this because the Ritva explains over here that the difference is not simply a difference in Dibur versus Ktivah, but a difference between something that has halachic implications versus something which is stam conversation or advice between parties. Even b'dibor, you would lose your forfeit your right if your dibor had a halachic ramification. If you went to court and testified on behalf of this individual that he bought the property, it'd be the same as signing on the document. Because in both cases, you've taken an action that has halachic ramifications. That's too significant an action to claim then, oh, I just wanted to get the property into the other person's possession. There the Chachamim said you've lost or you've forfeited your rights because you took an action that was way too official, way too formal to now make a claim that the guy was a gazlan. In our situation, where he just came for advice and you're just saying words that have no halachic implications, over there you can say, or you can make the claim, I was just doing it to get it to the better party, and even the Rabbanon would agree. And that's an important aspect over here, that the fact that it was all done in an oral fashion and there was no particular advice given that had halachic ramifications, signing of a document, testifying in court, that's why he doesn't forfeit his rights. And even according to the Chachamim, we normally say you forfeit your rights, over here you haven't forfeited your rights. All right, next case. Haudamar lei lechavrei, my bayit v'hayaro. What are you doing in my property? Amalei miplania zvinta v'chadei shnei chazaka. I bought it from so-and-so, and I've been there the requisite number of years that I no longer need a contract. Malay Planya Gazlanohu says, yeah, very nice, but you bought it from someone who is a gazlan. Amalei Vayitli Sade, the Atit Buurta, I have evidence, I have a deem that you came to me at night, but Martini Zavnani Ali, sell it to me. So here, the original owner says, the property was stolen by the gazlan and sold to you. You bought the property from a thief. So you have no claim over here to the property because your chazaka can't help you because you bought it from a thief. You bought it from someone who didn't own the property. The individual says, I have a deem that you approached me, the buyer, to purchase the property. Now, if you believe that the property is yours, why are you going in there to purchase the property from me? You should have just taken it to court and gotten the property back. Like now, he's making a claim against him. If you're going to make a claim, go to court. Why are you trying to buy it off of me? Now, there are those that say the other way around, that the buyer offered to sell it to the owner. That the buyer offered to sell it to the owner, and in the end, he didn't buy it, or maybe he sounded he was interested, or he came to talk about it, but he never ended up buying it. Amalei, Amina, the original can say, is the bilan dinai, I'm willing to purchase the din. Amarava, Rava again says here, Avininish, the Zavin dinai. People purchase their din. The Rashbam gives an explanation to it. He brings also Rabbeinu Kanano. They're both saying something of a similar nature, which is, Adam Tam, Sheinu Rotze Leit Kotet. There's some people who don't want to get involved in court cases. There are people who would rather not be in these difficult or litigious types of environments and be involved with court cases. Afilu al shalo, even if it rightfully is theirs, which we call an out-of-court settlement. Sometimes people are willing to settle, not because they think the other party is right, but rather to get rid of the nuisance of the other party, or to get rid of the time sink and money that would have to be expended to deal with the case. So people are willing to settle, even when they are right. Or, the way the Rabbeinu Chananel says it, Beferush, Amina lemizban dinai liknota mirivot. People are willing to buy their altercations or their arguments. Again, it's a similar type of nature, which is, people pay money not to be involved in these situations, into these arguments. And basically you have what is an out-of-court settlement. Over here, it's pretty clear that the price paid would have to dictate, which is if he offered him a small amount of money in order to buy the property back, then he can make such a claim. If he offered to buy the property back at full price, that type of claim doesn't hold water. Because then if he's paying full price for it, he can't say, oh, I was trying to settle out of court, because he's paying the full price or the full value of the property. That's not a way to settle or to avoid a court case. You'd rather be in a court case and not have to pay the full price of the property. If you're going to be able to buy it cheaply or for a small amount of money, then you can claim that this was a settlement, and that's why I wanted to avoid the litigation, and I settled in that manner. So next case. What are you doing in this piece of land? Says, I bought it from so-and-so, and I've been there for the requisite years of chazakah. Says, I have in my hand here a shtar that I bought it from him 4 years ago. That I have it in my possession, a shtar that says that 4 years ago, he sold it to me. Now, given that, the shtar precedes the shnei chazakah. Shnei chazakah are 3 years. This individual says, I bought it from so-and-so, and I've lived there for the requisite amount of time to establish a chazakah. I don't need a shtar anymore because I have the shnei chazakah. So this person says, wait a minute, I have a shtar that precedes your chazakah over here. You have a chazakah for 3 years. My shtar is dated from 4 years ago, and I purchased the property. It's my property. So Amar lei, misa varet shnei chazakah tlat shnei kamina. Wait a minute. When I said that I was there for the years of a chazakah, doesn't limit me to 3 years. It just means I was there a minimum of 3 years. Shnei chazakah tuva kamina. When I said shnei chazakah, I meant I was there for a long time. So what we're allowing this individual to do is, generally we have a principle in court, which is a person is not allowed to be toin v'chozer v'toin. That once you've given testimony in court, we do not allow you to perjure yourself. We don't allow you to change the testimony that you gave originally. There are exceptions to that rule. The exceptions to that rule are where your new testimony is not changing the original testimony, but rather giving definition or clarifying the original testimony. Over here, that's what we're saying. We're saying when he originally said, Shnei Chazakah, I've been there for the years of a Chazakah, we don't take him literally at face value. It doesn't mean 3 years and no more. It means that at minimum I was there 3 years. And therefore when I come back and say I was there for 7 years or 8 years, whatever it is, that's not a contradiction. That's not perjuring my original statement. And therefore it's not considered to be toin v'chozer v'toin. Given that, when he comes back and he says, look, you say you have a shtar from 4 years ago. When I said shnei chazakah, it means I thought I was there for 7 years. I've been there 7 years. Why does he need 7 years? Because he needs to get back beyond the 4 years where the shtar started, and he has to have a chazakah 3 years prior to that. So you can say, yeah, you have a shtar now, but that shtar was not valid because I had already taken possession of this property 3 years prior to you having that shtar. He said, I bought it from the original party. I don't have a shtar anymore because I have a shnei chazakah, but my shnei chazakah precede your shtar. So Gemara says, Amarava, Avedinish, the Karl Shnei Tuva Shnei Chazakah. Rava says, that is a valid claim. Where people are speaking about a large amount of years, they will term it as Shnei Chazakah. When I say Shnei Chazakah, they're not limiting themselves to 3 years. They're just saying, I've been there a long time. Long time means enough time that I no longer have an obligation to have the shtar or possess the shtar. V'hanei milei, that only works the achla sheva. That's only true if he was there for 7 years. The kodim chazaka the high, the shtar the hach. Because then his chazaka was completed before the other party has a shtar. Aval sheet, if he only has 6 years of a chazaka, ein lecha mecha'a gedola mizu. Then there's no greater objection to your ownership than a shtar. Which means that if he has 7 years, that means that he has established a chazaka of 3 years before this date on the shtar. Given that, he has a tana, which is I bought it from this party. He has a chazaka. I was there 3 years before there's any evidence to the contrary. Your shtar is invalid because I don't need a shtar anymore because I have the shnei chazaka. And my ownership is established before you ever had that shtar. On the other hand, if it's only 6 years, he has a problem. In 6 years back, he was only in the property for 2 years when that shtar was dated. Okay, so then he could say, why does that matter? I never heard him object to it. No, the answer is that shtar is the biggest objection to your ownership or your staying on the land. The fact that he sold the land when you were only there for 2 years is evidence of the fact that he didn't believe you were the owner of the land. And if you really thought you owned the land, you should have held on to your shtar. If you know that this was sold from under you 2 years into your chazaka period, then you can't establish a chazaka anymore. That is the clearest form of objection to your ownership is that he sold it to someone else. And therefore you need to establish a full chazaka before this shtar shows up. But if you don't have a full chazaka before this shtar shows up, your chazaka is no longer valid because he objected by selling it to someone else that you had any ownership over here. Now the Rashbam over here brings a machloket as to what you need Edim to testify to over here. He brings some others that you just need Edim to show us that you were there for the last 3 years. And then we will say, just like the Edim testify or evidence the fact you were there for 3 years, we will also believe you about the previous 4 years. So not that you need Edim to the full 7 years or the full 6 years. We just need you to say you have Edim that you were there for the last 3 years. Once we've established that, then we automatically parlay that into the larger number that you are giving us. Now, if the larger number was 7, it helps you. If the larger number was 6, it doesn't help you. The Rashbam rejects that and says, V'lav miltahi. That is not true at all. She'achazoka b'mkom ha'shtar omedet. The chazaka here is functioning in place of the shtar. And your chezkat gimel achronim, the last 3 years, are meaningless if you have edim to that fact because they don't prove anything about whether you were there before the shtar or not. You need evidence to the part that's preceded the shtar. Without that evidence, you have nothing over here. And therefore, you need edim to testify to the fact that you've been there for the full 7 years. And not just edim that you've been there for the last 3 years. That's how the Rashbam explains it. He says, Rabbeinu Chananel says the same thing, that you need edim that you were there for the full 7 years. For the, at least the first 3 years you have to be here. But the truth is that he needs the following years because otherwise he'll be perjuring himself. He said, I've been there Shnei Chazakah. Presently in the land, it says Shnei Chazakah. So in order for this to be an expansion on his language and not simply, I'm changing what I said, then we need him to have it be the full 7 years that he was there. So he needs edim to the fact that he was resident there for 7 years. And it's not sufficient to have someone come along and say he's been there for the last 3 years. We don't say there's a migo just because you've been there for the last 3 years. And you could have said, I bought it from you. What you could have suggested, this is what the Baalei Tosafot say, is what you could have suggested is, I have edim that I was there for the last 3 years. And migo that I could have said I bought it from you. You have a shtar, you're right. But I could have just said I bought it from you and now I've been there 3 years. The fact that I now say I bought it from the original owner shouldn't detract from my ability over here. So Tosafot says that's not a good migo. Because a migo only works when there's no evidence to the contrary. There's no evidence to the contrary, then you could say, oh, I could have said this, and instead I said this. Over here, you have to say you bought it from this individual because he showed up with a shtar. That's not amigo anymore. Your statement that you bought it from the original owner cannot be reconciled with the fact that there's a shtar here that says it was sold 4 years ago. And therefore, the amigo is a failed amigo over here. You're not believed. Given that, you can't just say that I was here for 3 years and that suffices. That's obviously the logic behind the other parties and their Ashbam. And you can see the Baalei Tosafot reject that as being a fair claim. And therefore, you need a deem to the full 7 years. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph.